Hello, everyone. Welcome to Off the Bench. My name is Az from Fantasy Football Scout, and I'm joined by the main man himself, Harry, FPL Harry. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you. Talking FPL midway through a World Cup. I'm glad. I'm looking forward to having FPL back already, so it's nice to be chatting about it.
Yeah, it's a strange one, isn't it? Because I'm really enjoying the World Cup, but I've got this kind of eye on Game Week 17. Obviously, we've got all the free transfers, almost like a wild card team sort of mid-season. So I'm thinking about that as well. And yeah, what we're going to do in this podcast is we're going to talk about the World Cup that's underway, link it back to some of the Premier League players that are playing in that, how they're getting on, that kind of thing. And then we're going to talk about FPL, talk about the unlimited transfer window. Everyone's able to make as many changes as they want to their teams ahead of Game Week 7. The deadline is on Boxing Day, a little Christmas present for us all. Player prices are all locked. This means you don't need to worry about missing price rises and falls and not being able to afford all your targets. But yeah, Harry, you enjoying the World Cup so far? How much of it are you watching?
I am enjoying it. I think like a lot of people, I was pretty apprehensive of a winter World Cup. But actually, you know, I'm working from home, you know, games at lunchtime, etc. I am watching a reasonable amount of it. The game's on in the evening as well. The football's been pretty good, and there's been a lot of upsets in there as well, which I think makes a World Cup what it is going to be. You know, the favourites winning every single game turns out to be quite a boring tournament, I think. So when you get results like Saudi Arabia beating Argentina, as much as I might want Messi to do well, it is quite nice to see a bit of upset here and there. So yeah, I think it's been a pretty good tournament so far. A lot of the groups are pretty open going into the final match day as well, which I think is, again, interesting to see.
I think that's what I've really enjoyed, is that the second match day has seen some of the teams who lost in the first game sort of winning in the second game. With teams like Spain, who, you know, look absolutely incredible, then suddenly drawing against Germany, Costa Rica winning against Japan when they look kind of out of it. That kind of thing is really exciting. What I thought we'd go through kind of group by group and sort of pick out some of the kind of key performances from the teams and in the key way that the players from the Premier League that are playing. So I know you're excited to start with Group A, because you know who I'm going to focus on. As a Brighton fan, we've got our Brighton contingent playing for Ecuador. We've got 4 points in that group, along with the Netherlands, and then Senegal and Qatar as well. I'm going to start with Brighton players, because why not? We've got 3 players playing for Ecuador. We've got 8 players in the World Cup overall. There's only Arsenal, Man City, Manchester United and Spurs who have more players in the World Cup than Brighton. As a fan, I'm pretty proud of that. I think that's a really, really impressive thing that we've got going. And you're going to bring me down, right?
Well, I'm not going to bring you down. I'll be as nice as possible. I think, you know, these stats of how many players are going to the World Cup is one thing. How many of them are starting and getting on the pitch is another. But Ecuador actually have looked pretty good, and it will be pretty close going into that final game against Senegal about how far they go into the tournament. I think one thing to sort of cover early on is, how far do we think teams need to get into the tournament before we start to worry about them in game week 17? So when we're going through all of these teams, how far forward do we think we're going to get? The semi-finals take place sort of a week before, the quarterfinals taking place sort of 2 weeks before game week 17. I think if teams getting knocked out in the quarterfinals, I'm pretty okay with them being back and available 2 weeks later once game week 17 starts. But it's the sort of teams that I really think are going to get through the quarterfinals, into the semifinals, into the final and third, fourth playoff, that I'm going to be slightly concerned about their minutes. But even the amount of minutes in their legs for some of these Ecuadorian players, even if they get into the round of 16, for example, if there are injuries they're picking up as well, it could impact them as well. Are you looking about the same? Teams are getting to the sort of last four?
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried about it even from now. You think there's less than a month to go until the restart. And, you know, it's not just the physical aspects, you know, the heat and playing all these games. It's the mental aspects as well for a lot of these players. All the training, all the pressure that comes with playing for the teams. I mean, players like Caicedo, for example, playing for Ecuador, you know, he's a really young player. He's going to be playing all the minutes for them. If they do make it to the quarterfinals, which they could well do, given how well they're playing. You know, you've got to think he's going to need to be managed a little bit, or maybe the young players need less rest and they're just going to come straight back in. It's really hard to judge. We're going to be looking at the press conferences, aren't we? You know, from the managers, to see kind of what we've got. But definitely semi-finals and beyond, you've got to think they're major doubts to start in that Boxing Day match, some of these key players.
Yeah. And to be honest, even if we get to the point where we think they're going to start in Boxing Day, because we've got those 3 rounds of fixtures coming very, very quickly in 17, 18, 19, I think the chance of them starting all 3 is very, very low. And the chance of them starting 2 is then, you know, reasonably low as well. So I definitely don't see them starting all 3 once they get to that latter stage in the tournament, which at Christmas maybe isn't that unusual a thing because there is a fixture congestion around then anyway. But yeah, it's just you don't have that certainty of them starting, even for players you would normally expect them to.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, it's really tricky. I mean, for Group A, there's not actually a huge amount of Premier League players playing. I think for the Netherlands, it's Malacia from Manchester United and Ake from City, who not a lot of people are probably going to be considering anything. Malacia's lost his place really for sure, though. If England get into the later stage, it's going to be a bit of a toss-up between them. And then it's the three Brighton players.
Yeah, the only other ones that I look at is Senegal. Because there are a couple of Chelsea players in there. So we've got Koulibaly and we've got Edouard Mendy coming in for Senegal. And I was planning on having Kepa, spoiler for my match day 17 team, a chance of having Kepa in as 4.5, rotating with Danny Ward. And Edouard Mendy has looked really good so far in the World Cup. There's always been a bit of debate amongst Chelsea fans, amongst fans generally, about whether these players, who should be starting in goal for them. And we kind of, as a Kepa owner, I was hoping Mendy had a good tournament, but maybe not as good as he's had, and it would be an easy decision. But maybe there's going to be a decision for Graham Potter to make in terms of who starts back in goal once game week 7 comes around, because Mendy has been Chelsea's number one for a very long time, and he's performing well in the World Cup, showing his shot stopping, which is what we've known him for. But of course, Kepa has that ability with the ball at his feet as well. So that's about the only thing that I look at, how far they go. Again, it's that Ecuador versus Senegal match in the sort of last match day, which we'll see which one of those two teams go through. Of course, yeah, as you mentioned, Group B, England, a lot riding on that and how far they go into the tournament. I was just looking at my draft and I've got a lot of England players, whether they're starting or whether they're not starting, both ways. I still think there's a lot that's going to happen depending on how far England go in this tournament.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, players like Saka. I mean, someone like Kane, for example. Kane's on 4 yellow cards, so only needs one more to get a ban before 19. So he could come in, get booked in the first game and then miss a game, or he could not play at all, come back, miss, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's a bit of uncertainty around him. I look at players like Foden, though, who aren't really starting. And I think maybe they're going to come in and be a bit fresher for a team like City. And Foden's obviously a player that I really want. It's going to be interesting to see what Southgate does, how much rotation comes in. It was a pretty poor performance against USA. There's a lot of calls for the team to be shifted around a bit. But if he sticks with the same 11 throughout the tournament, then some of the fringe players might be ready to go. I mean, look, Callum Wilson, for example, probably isn't going to get too much of a look in for England. So you've got to think he's probably going to be ready for Newcastle when the season restarts.
Yeah, I agree. And that final match of a match day, often you see a lot of rotation and these players will get some minutes and they might try out something slightly different that hasn't worked. But England look like they're going to go through. They do, in theory, need something against Wales. It just can't be a 3 or 4 nil loss and then Iran or USA can overtake them as well as Wales. But you're probably not going to see quite as much of a rotation just because we're trying to build up that fluidity, which we didn't have in that match day two. So again, yeah, some of those players, again, a few I've got my eye on, like Marcus Rashford, for example. He's coming off the bench. He looked quite good in the first game when he came off the bench, maybe slightly less so when he came on the second game. But that can be said about a lot of them. But those Manchester United fixtures when we come back do look really nice. And if he's not playing a lot of minutes, but he is, you know, training and keeping up to speed whilst at the World Cup, then again, I think he could do really well along with the likes of Luke Shaw as well.
It's a kind of unprecedented situation we're in with this World Cup being at this stage, because normally you watch your World Cup, you look at the players who are performing really well and you think, okay, these are the guys that I'm going to bring into my draft, you know, for the season. But actually, if these players carry on doing really well and get really far into the tournament, they're actually the players that we can't consider because they're the ones that are playing the most minutes and are going to be the most tired. So you're almost looking for the ones that aren't playing in the teams that, you know, in the teams that are doing well. It's a really tricky balance. I think the drafts are going to be really, really interesting when game week 17 kicks off, because I think people are going to go different ways. People are going to try and predict, you know, if key players are going to come straight back in. Maybe they won't. Maybe we'll be relying on our bench a bit more. But if you can get it right, then you can tap into some really good fixtures that we're going to talk about in a bit.
Yeah, absolutely, because you've got those three buckets. You've got players starting at the World Cup, you've got players at the World Cup training hard but not getting any minutes,
yep.
And then you've got the players who are currently not doing anything, yeah, waiting to go back to training before the World Cup starts again.
Yeah, and we are seeing some friendlies for some of the Premier League clubs as well. So it's not quite like the summer where, you know, teams and players are maybe taking a big rest, or there's these really meaningless friendlies going on. Like, we are seeing teams like Everton playing quite strong teams in friendly matches to keep their players kind of fit. We're definitely going to talk about Haaland and Salah, who are the two big names who obviously aren't at the World Cup, in a bit. But yeah, they look very attractive, I think. Anyone else in Group B? I mean, there's not too much of a Premier League contingent in any of these teams apart from England. Wales have got big Kiefer Moore up top, who changed the game in his first game but didn't have the same impact in the second. And then USA have got Pulisic, obviously. who is kind of getting a bit of a run in the team under Potter, but I don't really sense he's being fully trusted. I think he, you know, if USA go through and Pulisic can look good in the next couple of games, maybe he'll come. I think he needs some performances, right? Because he needs to impress Potter, because he's got a lot of options around there.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's actually looked pretty good in the World Cup. So yeah, if he comes back to Chelsea and, you know, the likes of Raheem Sterling and Aubameyang continue to perform like they are at the moment at Chelsea, there's no reason that Pulisic might not get a run of minutes in the team. But again, I don't think it's going to be that consistency of starts. The only one that we are missing, of course, came on as a substitute in their last match is Danny Ward, the guy who can't get enough shout outs in FPL podcasts at the moment. Again, goalkeepers is slightly different about how many minutes they play. It's more about their rhythm and fluidity as long as he doesn't get injured. But yeah, a lot of us will be looking to own him, I'm sure, when game week 17 comes around.
Well, I can't quite understand the decision to bench Hennessy, to play Hennessy and bench Ward, given how good Ward has been over the last kind of six weeks. I mean, maybe we look at it too much from a fantasy lens, because I've had him and he's been very, you know, racking up the points for me. Obviously, I don't think the Wales manager has that kind of lens on things, but keeping faith in Hennessy. But yeah, I mean, Ward is going to be close to 100% owned, I think, from the people who take the game seriously, because he's cheap. Leicester are looking half decent, and he's been doing really well. So I think he's an easy choice. It's just who do you pair him with, really. Let's move over to Group C. Poland, Argentina, Saudi Arabia, Mexico. Really, really interesting group. Obviously, Argentina with a shock loss to Saudi Arabia in match day one, as you mentioned. And then they got the win against Mexico with it's a pretty dire game, actually. But Messi was fantastic and two great goals for Argentina in that game. Poland, Matty Cash playing for Poland. I didn't even realise that he was playing for Poland until the tournament started. I saw him in the lineup and I was like, is that Matty Cash from Villa? But, you know, Poland are doing well and they look like they've got a strong chance of going through. Mm-hmm. And he's a player I like, really. And what do you think about, you know, Villa under Emery? Do you think there's sort of potential for these fullbacks?
Yeah, they do look good. And I think defensively, Luka Dean and Matty Cash are definitely the two that I will be looking at once the game returns. I'm just still a little bit unsure when there are so many good defenders that we're going to be picking from top teams as well that come in at a similar price. When you look at the likes of Ben White, likes of Diego Dalot, a lot of those cheap options, Castagne again performing well, there is a lot of competition for those cheap defenders. But again, differential wise, I think those Aston Villa boys could do really well. Poland again sitting top of the group, but they do finish the group stage against Argentina. So in theory, they are looking in a good position, but a loss in this game will probably likely actually send them out of the tournament. So one to keep an eye on. I was very impressed with them in the second game when they got their win, less so in match day one. But again, Matty Cash, we know what he can do. We know what the fullbacks at Aston Villa can do. So definitely one I'm keeping my eye on how far they go in the tournament and whether he's fully rested as well, coming back for game week 17.
Yep. Big names for Argentina. Obviously, another Brighton player, Alexis McAllister, starting for Argentina. Can't help but mention him. It is amazing. I mean, Argentina being, you know, one of the favourites for the tournament, along with Brazil and France. Again, to have a Brighton player starting for Argentina is incredible for me. Also, they've also got Martinez as well of Manchester United, who I don't think he started the first game, did he? And then he came in for the second match, but he's looked absolutely brilliant when I've seen him on the ball and the way he plays. Surely he's going to be a lock-in now for the rest of the tournament for Argentina, because he does look like I was a bit sceptical of him. I got drawn into the whole thing about his height and, you know, worries about his aerial ability, but I have to say he's been really impressive in the league and he's carrying it on into this tournament.
Yeah, there was a bit of a reshuffle at the back for Argentina in their second game. And yeah, I have to say again, I was one of those that was pretty sceptical of him coming in. You know, a lot of the centre-backs that Manchester United had signed, Maguire's form had been pretty mixed. Varane had been in and out of the team because of injury. And then they signed Martinez and there was a lot of talk about whether he was going to be able to do it. But I have to say, so far in the Premier League and then looking at him at Argentina as well, he does look really solid and he's helping that Manchester United defence generally look a lot better than it has. So again, a Varane-Martinez defensive partnership with Luke Shaw and Diego Dalot is suddenly a defence that I'm looking like I really want to go and invest in them. Now, if Martinez goes far into the tournament and they're having to rotate their defence in game week 17, 18, 19, it does put a little bit of doubt in my mind. But Martinez to me seems like a bit of a trooper. I do think even if they go quite far, it won't be very long before he's back in that team.
Yeah, I think he's one of those players who probably we're not going to consider too much for our FPL teams, but when he's in the side, you've got to think he makes options like Dallow's, like fairly popular, Shaw, for example. Making that defence stronger is really important. And I want to see a fit Martinez come into the United side, because, you know, if we'll say Martinez and Maguire both go quite far, they're going to be a bit short on options with Varane as well. Mm-hmm. So you want to see a strong United back line to consider, because they've got really, really good fixtures to start the restart as well. They've got Romero as well, Argentina. Of Spurs, they're choosing to stick with Otamendi to really go for that experience in there. But again, Romero, I think is a great player, but we're probably not going to consider it. He gets too many yellow cards, doesn't he, for Spurs? But does boost that back line. And you know, if we're going for like Perisic, we'll probably talk about in a bit. If we're going for other wing backs or other defenders, we probably want Romero in the side. Let's go to Group D. France, Australia, Denmark and Tunisia. I mean, firstly, it's amazing to have Eriksen back and playing. I've just really enjoyed seeing him play. You know, after what happened in the last tournament for him now, it's absolutely amazing. But they are struggling. I mean, just 1 point in two matches. France already qualified. They're going to need a big performance. Australia with 3 points. I was very impressed by them.
Yeah, exactly. I think Denmark, probably one of the teams when we get onto it that we haven't seen perform quite as the level we maybe think they were going to so far this tournament. Australia, again, the surprise result so far. Again, great to see, and a lot of celebrations there having them qualify for the World Cup. This year, it looks like they could do well enough to get out of the group. Again, France with 6 points being the ones that are already there. A few Premier League players, actually less than they used to be in this France team. A lot of them coming in defence. Again, we've got Saliba and Konate both in the French defence there. Both Liverpool and Arsenal will be hoping those two come back in full fitness, because they will be very much needed going into game week 17 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, I think Saliba is kind of one of the stand-up players of the first half. We're calling it first half, not quite first half of the season, but nearly first half.
Pretty much,
yeah. I mean, Saliba's been brilliant. He's been 4.5 million at the start of the season. A lot of people got him in early. He's been getting, got a couple of goals with some really, really low kind of XG statistics, if you're into that kind of stuff. Basically goals where you wouldn't really expect him to get goals. And that's all we can ask for. Solid defence, cheap, getting the odd goal. I think he might have had an assist as well. I think he's up to around kind of 5 million now, but he is actually a player that I'm looking at, because I want to tap into the Arsenal defence. And he's just looked so good the first half of the season.
Yeah, he has. And that Arsenal defence as well has just been solid, really, wherever you invest in it. Saliba's price rise all the way up to about 5.3 now is a lot for me to go and buy him. And I think
I did have Saliba. 5.3? Wow.
He's gone up a long way. He's actually, I think he's overtaken Gabriel now in terms of price, which makes it a slightly more difficult own. I'm personally looking at Ben White, because I don't necessarily know if I'm going to start them every week. There are a lot of good defenders. So 4.6 million for a Ben White that looks like he's playing every week, although he doesn't have that goal threat. It is a bit of money saving that I might have to do to invest elsewhere. But I think elsewhere in that Arsenal defence, yeah, like we've said, Gabriel, whether it's going to be Zinchenko, whether it's going to be Tierney at that left-hand side, is slightly more difficult to predict. But the centre-backs in Gabriel, Saliba as well, even outside of FPL, he's looking like a world-class defender. So whenever he's in that Arsenal team, the rest of them just look better around him, I think.
Yeah, I didn't realise he'd gone up so high. I think Gabriel has historically had really good goal threat kind of in the league. So if he's a bit cheaper, he's probably the one you want to go for. But I mean, I've had Ben White for the last few weeks of the Premier League season. He's just been chipping away. You know, he got an assist in one game, a couple of clean sheets. Again, it's all you can really ask. All you want for 4.5 million in defence. You know, that's kind of all you can ask for. It's going to be interesting talking to you about defenders in a bit, because I took all my money out of defence after being very, very big at the back at the start. I've gone very, very cheap. And again, I think that's going to be a strategy, different strategies between different people, whether they put a lot of money in or kind of go really cheap. Anyone from Denmark that we need to mention here? I mean, there's Christensen from Leeds, isn't there? He plays for them.
Yeah, and then Anderson at Crystal Palace is the only other one. But again, it doesn't look like they're going to be making it out of the group unless there's a shock result going into match day three. So those guys and Eriksen should be having a pretty full recovery going into game week 17.
Yep. Group E then, we've got Spain at the top with 4 points, Japan, Costa Rica and Germany, who have underperformed in this tournament. Again, there's not a huge amount of Premier League players in this in this group either. Germany have obviously had a lot of Bundesliga players historically playing for them and have done again. Spain, again, a lot of players coming from La Liga as well. Got Matoma for Brighton in Japan, but he's coming off the bench. And yeah, I mean, anyone that you're keeping your eye on in this group?
No, not really. Although I have to say this is probably my favorite group of the whole tournament so far. I think match day three is going to be so exciting. Germany still probably looking like they can do enough to go through because Spain also need a result. So if Germany and Spain win, they both look like they go through, which is what we'd expect at the start of the tournament, but we wouldn't have expected the group to look quite as it does. The only one I look at is Laporte at Spain, just because if he goes far in the tournament, it could be a slight boost to the other Manchester City centre-backs, although they have looked pretty good defensively, and Rodri at Manchester City also playing at centre-back, not really an FPL option for us, but again, it's just how far they go in the tournament. It could impact the rest of those sort of Manchester City players around them if they're not going to feature quite in game week 17.
I think that's a really good point, because if Spain do reach the kind of right at the later stages, which you've got to think that they're going to be hopeful for,
after that big
win in the start and getting through like a tough group, and Rodri is such a key player for City as well, so you know they're going to hope that Phillips can come in and be fit and replace him, I think, if that happens, because and Laporte as well. I mean, Laporte's been kind of rotated a bit out of City, but Rodri really kind of is that key man. Let's take a look at Group F has got some interesting players. This is Croatia, Morocco, Belgium and Canada. I think we've got to start talking about De Bruyne, because De Bruyne has not delivered at all in this tournament. He's already said that the squad is aging. He doesn't look happy. His body language to me looks a bit off. And sometimes we see players who aren't, you know, doing well for their clubs go and play for their countries and do really well. De Bruyne is the opposite in this tournament, which is a really strange one given the quality he's got.
Yeah, I think this Belgium team, and everyone listening, I'm sure, will agree that this is one team that just have not clicked so far this tournament. And I don't really see it changing. The body language, not from just from De Bruyne, but a lot around the team is not really there. They don't look like they have the confidence that they're going to go really far in this tournament. There's a lot of rotation in that team as well. One player, not to talk too much about Brighton players, but I'm not sure quite how Leandro Trossard is not in the Belgium starting lineup at the moment. But again, they could really struggle to go out of the group because they play Croatia in the final game, and one of those teams will have to go out. They're playing against each other because Morocco then play against Canada. So if Belgium don't beat Croatia, then that will probably be the end of the tournament for the likes of Trossard, for the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, which suddenly makes us think, okay, if we're going to have a pretty rested Kevin De Bruyne starting with a fully rested Erling Haaland going into game week 17.
Absolutely.
And that with a pretty rested Phil Foden as well, it suddenly starts to think, how am I going to get as many of these Manchester City players into my team as I can going into that fixture?
You can tell we're fantasy football nerds when we're looking at a game like Belgium-Croatia and all we're thinking about is, how's this going to affect our game week 17 drafts? But that is the key game. That is the key game in match day three is Belgium versus Croatia, because like you say, it's going to dictate whether we have these. I think it will dictate whether I have Trossard and De Bruyne in my side. If Belgium go out early, I think they're absolute locks in my side, because they're two absolute key men, you know, for their respective teams, who are going to have a nice break and are probably going to be quite happy to go back to their clubs, who are both doing quite well, and get rid of some of that pressure that they'll be feeling from the Belgian fans.
No, I agree. We'll talk about De Bruyne when we talk about the premiums. There are a lot of them doing quite well, and maybe if Kane and hopefully England go far in the tournament, it will make up my mind for me and I won't have to go with Harry Kane and I can go with Kevin De Bruyne instead. But absolutely, if they go out in the group stage and he's going to be fully rested, although he already looks like he doesn't get rotated very much in that Manchester City team, if he's one of the few players that hasn't played very much over the whole of December, by the time the football starts again, definitely he'll be a player that I'm looking at, along with Trossard as well.
Yep. And one other player to mention in this group is Ziyech, playing for Morocco. He's looked really good. I thought he had a goal disallowed offside yesterday, got an assist in that game as well. Another Chelsea player who you almost feel is playing for a bit of their future, really, because hasn't been trusted by Potter so far. He's a player that I really, really rate, but he does kind of drift in and out of games at times. And I guess that's why he hasn't had the full backing of Potter. But, you know, if Morocco get through this group and can progress a bit later on, and Ziyech is that kind of main man, I wonder if his Chelsea fortunes could be rejuvenated a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to do anything bad for his Chelsea fortunes. It's only going to work positively. I think the issue that, again, not going to go into the dynamics of Ziyech at Chelsea too much, but I think there's been a little bit of a worry about his sort of attitude at Chelsea, which we see when he plays for Morocco. If we can have that Ziyech at Chelsea, he would be in our starting 11 every week. So if he does continue to perform like he is now, then absolutely he's got a reason to be back in that Chelsea team. The Croatia players we didn't quite mention, there is Perisic as well in there, playing sort of left wing, slightly different to what we see with him playing at Tottenham. Again, if they go through, they have looked The first game, they didn't quite get up to speed and they were a bit sluggish in that first match. But match day two against Canada, we really saw the Croatia that we've seen in previous seasons. Both Kovacic looking really good, Perisic looking good as well. If they can go far in the tournament again, those Tottenham fullbacks have already been a nightmare to rotate and to predict. And if Perisic is going to go far in the tournament, that's only going to make that more difficult to do, I think.
Yeah, I think if Perisic gets through this round with Croatia, I think that probably eliminates him in our drafts. If they're knocked out, and you know he's got this kind of month to kind of recover, okay, maybe. But I mean, he's been quite disappointing anyway for FPL wise in the league. Like you say, the rotation, but even when he's been playing, the goals and assists haven't really been there either. So yeah, I'm not too hot on him. And yeah, I think like you say, if Croatia go through, I think that kind of makes him even less of an attractive option. Group G then, I mean, Brazil, Switzerland, Cameroon and Serbia. I mean, Brazil have been, at the time of recording, they've only played one match. So we don't know how they're going to get on in the second game, but they look really, really strong in that. And loads of Premier League players, you know, Marcelli not really getting a look in, Gomes on the bench. They've got Gabriel Jesus not playing. Richarlison got the two goals in the first game. They've got Thiago Silva in defence. Loads of Premier League talent. And you've got to think they're going to get to the later stages, semi-finals at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Probably one, if not the hot favourites now, especially after that Argentina result, that they will be in that latter stage of the tournament. I think all of us would probably agree on that. And again, they have, if not the biggest sort of Premier League contingency outside of the likes of England. So there are a lot of them. Some of them are sitting on the bench. Again, like we said, Martinelli, Gabriel Jesus, two very popular assets in our FPL teams, that if they do go far in the tournament, it's not necessarily that bad a thing because they will just be keeping up rhythm. They're not getting that many minutes. There are a couple, again, that maybe get slightly more minutes in the likes of Thiago Silva in there as well. But yeah, I think they will go far. The ones that we actually want to pick maybe are not going to get that many minutes on the pitch, but you had have to expect they're going to stay in Qatar until a very late stage in this tournament.
Yeah, I mean, Martinelli's the key one, isn't it? Because a lot of people had him at the start of the season. They've got loads of value tied up in him. If they do get to the later stage of the seasons and we don't really get concrete news about whether he's fit and ready to play, selling him is going to be reluctant because you're probably going to want him because his price is so good and he's been performing so well. But if he's going to miss two or three matches and get up to speed, it's going to be tricky to keep him. So yeah, I think he's the one for me that I'm a bit worried about, because I'm expecting Brazil to get through and I do want to keep Martinelli, but I do worry that I might not be able to if he's he might come on and start playing a bit more in the matches as well, but it looks like they're probably going to be quite settled.
Yeah, I suppose the only thing with Neymar likely to miss the next couple of games, who it's going to be that fills in for him. It could end up being Martinelli, and then it's a completely different conversation if he does end up playing a lot of minutes deep into this tournament.
Yep, absolutely. Serbia in this group as well. They haven't got, it's difficult to really judge these teams because they've only played one game at the time of recording. Obviously, it's Mitrovic up top for them. There's some worries about his fitness going into this. But did start in that first game. So yeah, I mean, ideally I want to keep Mitrovic as well. So sorry, Serbia, but I'm kind of hoping that you get eliminated quite early just so he can have a bit of a rest. Because, you know, again, if they do get through another couple of rounds, he's going to be a doubt, even given his importance for Fulham.
Yeah, I think after match day one playing against Brazil, it's difficult to judge how far we think they're going to go. But Mitrovic is definitely a player that I hope gets a little bit of rest. He's been a player that we've looked at team sheets for the past couple of weeks, not knowing if he's going to be there or not. He's had a sort of recurring injury and I feel like he needs a bit of time off if he's going to hit the second half of the season running like he did most of the first half of the season as well. So for him to be a viable asset, more than anything, I just think he needs a couple of weeks to make sure he's injury free going into game week 17.
Yep, completely agree. Group H, there's loads of Premier League players in this one. This is Portugal, South Korea, Uruguay and Ghana. I mean, obviously, we've actually got one less player than we started with because Cristiano Ronaldo has left Man U. Does that boost someone like Fernandes, do you reckon? Does that make him like a kind of a premium that we might want to consider, just given how good United's fixtures are?
Yeah, I don't necessarily think it just boosts him, but I think there are a lot of those Manchester United attackers that I'm suddenly thinking, the rotation was there. There was a slight doubt of where they were going to go when Ronaldo's big name came back into the lineup, who it was going to be that dropped out. And now I'm suddenly looking at their opening fixtures and thinking, I maybe want a couple of your assets going into this. I spoke about Marcus Rashford early on. I've also got Diego Dalot in my defence as well. But yeah, I do think without Cristiano Ronaldo in there, the likes of Martial, if he's going to be the one leading the line up front, if it's going to be Marcus Rashford in midfield as well, both those assets I think will be quite popular if you don't want to go up to the likes of Fernandes. But we do tend to see that Fernandes' performances in terms of FPL do increase when Cristiano Ronaldo's not in the side, and it will likely mean that penalties do return to Bruno Fernandes, which again has been a great route for points for anyone who's owned him over the past couple of seasons. Again, the other one who will be very popular, has served his suspension for 5 yellow cards now as well, is Diego Dalo. He's up to 4.8 million in FPL. He's currently in my draft. But again, if Portugal go very far in the tournament, which they definitely could do, they've looked quite strong so far, it does put a little bit of doubt in my mind, and I may sway to the likes of Luke Shaw. But again, England could go far as well. I do like the Manchester United defence, but it's predicting which one of them is going to start if all of their defenders go far into the tournament, which they are very capable of doing.
I really like Martial, given that he's down to 6.7 in FPL. Mm-hmm. Ronaldo's gone and he hasn't gone with France to the World Cup. Yep. I think, you know, he's had this injury as well, and he's able to kind of work on that a bit and get his fitness up. And I think he's going to come straight back in and be playing up front for them. So I think he's going to be, I think he could be a player that goes massively under the radar, 1.9% ownership in the game at the moment. But yeah, he's someone I've really got my eye on given what I've seen so far.
Yeah, there's a lot of good forwards, and we'll talk about it when you get to the sort of more FPL section and we talk about our teams. But there are a lot of forwards that I still want going into game week 17. So for example, making a switch of going Rashford in my midfield over going with Martial might just be what I have to do. But yeah, I do really like the idea of Martial without Cristiano Ronaldo there.
Yeah, absolutely. Speaking of forwards, I mean, Darwin Nunez is carrying the hopes of the Uruguay attack. Again, only one game played at the time of recording. They didn't score, so it's hard to judge them. This could go out and they've scored 3 goals. I think they're playing today, aren't they? So, you know, this might be completely outdated, but you know, Nunes playing up front for Uruguay with the kind of aging Cavani and Suarez, there is a lot of pressure on him to deliver. There's a lot of pressure on him at Liverpool as well, given the amount of money they've spent on him. Is it good in spells? He has scored a couple of goals. He obviously got that red card quite early on in the season. His season's been a bit stop-start. But he's someone that I'm looking at for the restart.
Yeah, the Liverpool attack is one of the things that's causing my draft at the moment a lot of headaches and exactly where I go in it. Because we're likely to have Jota and Diaz both back to full fitness. Of course, there's Firmino there as well, not really playing at the World Cup. Then you've got Darwin Nunez. And then, of course, you've got the most expensive of them in Mo Salah, also not at the World Cup. Darwin Nunez was the one I was going to go with. But again, if they go far in the tournament, then I can't see him starting that many games once we've had a full rest and a full recuperation for a lot of those other forwards. But I definitely think that I'm going to have a piece of that Liverpool attack in my draft if and when game week 17 comes around and they're looking back to sort of full strength like we've known Liverpool to do.
Yep, absolutely. So that's all the groups covered. Let's talk about how this affects kind of our FPL teams. How many drafts have you made? Have you been sort of tinkering away, or are you just kind of leaving it a little bit?
I've made a few. I made a couple very early on when I think game week 16 ended. I was on there for the first week because we had a week before the World Cup started and I was playing around with my team trying to tinker away, and then less so. And I think over the past week, again, we've seen a couple of the groups become a little bit more interesting. I've suddenly thought, okay, maybe how does this go and impact my team a little bit? So I have got a draft, which I'm pretty happy with. Do you want to go draft first, or should we talk about a couple of the teams in more general to start with?
It's up to you. I mean, I'd love to hear your draft. So yeah, let's go straight to that.
So the way I've sort of picked my draft so far is a lot of it is fixture based when it comes to the attack. But what I'm trying to do with my team now is actually, because there's so many good defenders, is pick a defense that I kind of plan on not touching for a lot of weeks. And because we have this midweek reset, this mid-season reset, we don't probably plan on playing our second half of the season wild card until quite late on. So we kind of need a defense that we're quite happy with, and we can maybe move around if there's double game weeks and blank game weeks, which of course there's going to be in the second half of the season. So I've got Ben White in there. I've currently got Diego Dalo. Again, I'll have to see how far he goes. I've got Kieran Trippier. Again, I'll have to see how far he goes. Cancelo. Again, I've got a lot of defenders who could go far in the tournament as well. And then I've currently got Patterson as my cheap option with Kepa and Danny Ward as my two goalkeepers. But I've got four defenders in there, in Ben White of Arsenal, Dalo of Manchester United, then Trippier and Cancelo, that I think a lot of us would be very, very happy to own. And then the forward, it just comes down to fixtures, and it comes down to a couple of teams, and I'd love to get your thoughts on them. That really is Newcastle. Who do I want out of Wilson and Almiron, or do I go in on both of them? We then got Manchester City. Is it Haaland? Do we go Foden, do we go Kevin De Bruyne in that midfield as well? Do I dare go back on to Phil Foden after what's happened over the past few weeks? And then it's Arsenal as well, along with Tottenham. So the two North London clubs. It's do I want other than Martinelli? Do I want Harry Kane in there as well? Those are the real questions that I'm trying to find an answer to at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's some great questions. I mean, Arsenal, I'm looking at the fixtures. I mean, a lot of it is fixture dependent, right? And I guess one of the key questions is how many fixtures do you look at, you know, kind of going forward? So, you know, do you just look at game week 17, try and get the best, design the best team for that? Or do you do, you know, the kind of the logical thing, which is look for 3 or 4 game weeks? But then you've got to think that teams are going to rotate and shift around. And it's a really kind of difficult time, I think, for a lot of FPL managers to kind of get this right. But so we're looking kind of the 3 to 4 fixtures, for example, next 3 to 4. I look at Arsenal, I see West Ham, Brighton, Newcastle, Spurs in the first 4, even going up to United in 5. That isn't the easiest run of games for Arsenal. And we've talked about a lot of their players who we think are going to progress quite far into the tournament. Players like Saka, for example, potentially, and players like Martinelli as well. And yeah, I think Ben White is a great option because he's not going to start or play regularly. But there isn't a huge amount of other players I really want to be considering. I think, as I said, we talked about Martinelli is kind of the key man. But are you focusing on fixtures with a lot of these? I mean, Newcastle have got a good run. Leicester, Leeds, Fulham in the first 4. Chelsea, I mean, Bournemouth, Forest and Palace in the first 4 looks really good. But it's United for me. I mean, the first 3 games coming back for the restart, Nottingham Forest at home, Wolves away, Bournemouth at home.
Yeah.
I think we've got to have some United players in there.
Absolutely. I think defensively, I'm more looking at, I want defences that I trust and defenders that I can own for a long period of time. I feel like this season I spent a lot of time owning defenders for short amounts of time and wasting transfers on them. And I want to just be able to focus on my attack. But attack-wise, definitely, I'm looking at those fixtures. Normally, I look about 6 weeks ahead. I am trying to weight it slightly more towards the first 3 and players I think are going to start that, particularly over the Christmas period, because then I can shake things around afterwards if I can. But as you said, I'm pretty certain there'll be a Manchester United attacker in my team somewhere, with Nottingham Forest, Wolves and Bournemouth in their first 3. It then does get a little bit more difficult for them with Manchester City and Arsenal. But interestingly, it does coincide, particularly when it does get slightly easier for Leicester as well. So I've got a little eye on Rashford to James Maddison once those fixtures do come around. But yeah, a few of the others that we've got up at the top as well, Liverpool, which we can talk about, then Manchester City as well, both ranking quite high up. What's your plan with Liverpool? I know we spoke about it with Darwin Nunez, but are you looking like you want to go back in on Salah? Is that budget too much for you? We're going to try and punt on one of the midfielders, or is it Darwin up front?
Oh, it feels like the start of the season when we're all saying that Salah's a must-have, and you know he scores well in the first game and then kind of just completely tails off. But I'm going to say it again, I really do feel Salah is a must-have. Given the fixtures, you know, Villa away, Leicester at home, Brentford, Brighton. I mean, it's not like the best fixtures. You know, Villa are improving under Emery. Leicester have improved defensively. You know, Brighton are a decent kind of side as well. So it's not an amazing bunch of fixtures, but it's still a group of fixtures where you expect some goals in. Salah for me is definitely going to be in there, given that he's had this break and he's off. I mean, I want some premium players who are rested, and I think Salah and Haaland are just perfect because they are the two best players in the league on their day for scoring FPL points. That's just who they are. Salah hasn't really delivered to the levels that we've seen him do in previous seasons, but given the break he's had, I think he is, I'm going to say, I think he is a must-have to own going forward. The really interesting one, I think, is Trent. Because, you know, again, we were saying at the start of the season he's a must-have, but he's obviously hasn't been. But he's going to be one of these players who we talked about, a fringe player for England who is going to come back in, surely get straight back into the side. You don't think there's any justification for going back to Trent?
It's not that I don't think there's any justification at all. I think there's a reasonable amount of why maybe you'd want Trent in your team, and what he's done, his historical performances make him a good pick. But his performances over the past 6 months in the Premier League this season definitely do not make him a good pick. And I think when there are so many other defenders who are consistently performing and actually outperforming him with probably better defensive fixtures to start the season, I'd be very surprised if I go there. And that's partly because I've moved quite away from that sort of big at the back structure. And I know we mentioned it. So I've moved away from that to actually try and squeeze 3 premiums into my team. So I know you mentioned you want Salah, you want Haaland. Does that mean you're going without Kevin De Bruyne or Harry Kane, or are you going for a third one? So I've got Harry Kane in there at the moment, but it does mean Cancelo is my only defender I've got in that's sort of over 5.5 million. And I just can't see the money on Trent really being worth it. I want to see points from him before I go buying back into him, given how they've performed, particularly defensively so far this season.
I mean, my season turned around when I got rid of all the money in my defence. So who's the most expensive player in my defence at the moment? I think it's Trippier. I can sell him for 5.5. He's up to 5.9 now. But I mean, I paid 5.1 for him or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So in theory, my most expensive defender is 5.1 million. At the start of the season, I had Cancelo, Trippier, Perisic, Trent. I had all my money in defence. And now I've gone kind of super cheap. And it's weird for me now talking about going back to Trent, because I'd probably go Trent, I'd probably go Cancelo and start pushing my money back in. But I don't think I will. I think I will go for the third premium, which has been working so well for me. And I think De Bruyne, depending on what happens with Belgium in this group stage, I think could be an absolutely perfect option in that position. So it could well be De Bruyne, Salah and Haaland for me. Kane I do want, but I'm expecting England to go quite far. There's already concerns about his fitness and we're only two games kind of into it. He's got that yellow card hanging around him as well. So if England progress quite far and Belgium get knocked out early, I'll probably go with De Bruyne.
Yeah, probably makes sense. So again, just to wrap up, in terms of, you said that you wanted an essential player in Salah in your team. Who else are you putting that in that sort of must-have bracket, not to use the word essential? Salah in there, of course, I'm imagining you're putting Erling Haaland in there. Kevin De Bruyne sounds like he's getting pretty close if he gets knocked out of the World Cup early on. Anyone else you're putting in there? Miguel Almiron, is he putting in the same bracket as Mo Salah?
He should be. He should be higher than Mo Salah, given his price and his performances. I think one of the Newcastle attack is going to be really important. One of Wilson or Almiron. Trippier, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to sell Trippier. You know, he's been looking great for England. You know, maybe his starts are a bit of a doubt if England progress quite far in, but at the same time, you're not going to sell him because of the value you've got tied up. So it's going to be at least two Newcastle players for me. But I don't really want to go down the must-have route. I'm trying to be a bit more flexible with stuff. I want to see kind of how teams progress. I think Salah and Haaland are locks because, you know, they haven't been playing. I think Danny Ward as well, like you mentioned, it's whether I go with the Leicester double up and really try and keep that money, or if I go for Kepa. The thing with going for Kepa is even if Mendy does come in, you've got that backup of Ward coming in too. So I really do like that double up. I think that's going to be really popular. But no, I haven't really got any must-haves so far, apart from kind of the two obvious ones and a Newcastle defender in Trippier. I'm trying to keep my options open.
Nice. So again, we haven't actually heard your draft, but how close are you to being finished with it? How many hundreds of times are you going to change it before game week 17 comes around?
Hundreds. I don't even think there's too much sense in me reading it out. It's going to change. It's going to change a lot. I'm looking at players like Maddison, for example, who I think could be a really, really strong contender to come in. There's fitness concerns with him at the moment, but he could end up breaking into this England side because Mount hasn't really performed well so far. Maybe Maddison does come in. But again, if he's a fringe player and he comes back for Leicester, I think he'll be a lock in my side as well. So yeah, it's going to be really interesting. It's going to see who's going to go out in the group stage. That's what I'm kind of urging people to look at. Who goes out in the group stages is going to have a massive impact on my team, because I'm particularly looking at Belgium, for example, to see if Trossard and De Bruyne come in. If Belgium go out, those two will definitely be in.
Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So I think we've covered everything. We've had a wrap up of all the groups so far. Again, how things progress will maybe change our thinking a little bit. We're really looking at who goes out early on and who's going to be really rested going into those three quick game weeks once the World Cup does end. We've had a look at our drafts as well. So the World Cup group stages will be finalised this week, and a lot of those players will be returning to their clubs after they exit the competition. Off the Bench will be back during the round of 16 to assess the impact of the players who have already been knocked out of the World Cup and whether this will make them better picks for game week 17. Looks like all eyes are on Kevin De Bruyne for us. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks, everyone.